Engaging presentations on the most urgent problem of our day and what you can do about it.
Now, the End Abortion Podcast by Priests for Life.
Happy St. Patrick's Day and welcome to Pro-Life Primetime News. Today is Friday, March 17th. I'm Leslie Palma.
And I'm Teresa Watson. Thank you for joining us. A showdown in Amarillo will be our top story tonight.
Our guest, Laura Streitman, will explain how pro-life groups are battling an extreme ballot initiative in Ohio.
In Abortion in the News, Leslie will tell you about two people arrested on felony charges in Florida after disrupting a pro-life exhibit.
Senator Rick Scott and Governor Ron DeSantis are at odds over a six-week abortion bill in Florida. Teresa will give you all the details and other political happenings and political news in a nutshell.
Our closing story tonight will tell you about an adoption option that you probably haven't heard of. Stay tuned. You won't want to miss our segment on snowflake embryo adoption.
Federal District Court Judge Matthew Kaczmarek promised a decision as soon as possible in a case out of Amarillo, Texas that could have major implications for the future of chemical abortion. The judge heard 4 hours of arguments Wednesday in the case called the Alliance for Hippocratic Medicine versus FDA.
The suit asks the judge to pull the drug mifepristone from the market immediately, arguing that the FDA overlooked safety issues in favor of political considerations when the drug was approved in 2000. Lawyers for the plaintiffs contend that since pregnancy is not a disease, the drug should not have been evaluated under the FDA's accelerated program.
The Justice Department and Danko Laboratories, one of the two U.S. drug makers that manufacture mifepristone, argued in favor of the FDA, insisting the drug is effective and has limited side effects. If Kaczmarek issues a preliminary injunction, the Justice Department is expected to request an emergency stay from the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals. The case is very likely to wind up eventually in front of the U.S. Supreme Court.
More than half of all U.S. abortions are now chemical procedures. Mifepristone is the first drug in a chemical abortion two-drug regimen. If the judge suspends the sale of mifepristone, abortion providers, including Planned Parenthood, have already announced plans to continue offering chemical abortion using only the second drug, misoprostol, which is not involved in the lawsuit. Misoprostol is used by itself in some parts of the world, but pro-life doctors say it is less effective than when used with mifepristone and has its own health risks.
The Women's March was expected to protest outside the Amarillo courtroom, though only about 15 people showed up Wednesday. Some were dressed as clowns, and one person was wearing a kangaroo costume. Ohio looks to be the next state that will attempt to do an end run around laws restricting abortion by enshrining abortion rights in the state constitution through a ballot amendment. On Monday, the Ohio Ballot Board unanimously approved a measure to place on the November ballot this year an amendment that states every individual has a right to make and carry out one's own reproductive decisions, including but not limited to decisions on contraception, fertility treatment, continuing one's own pregnancy, miscarriage care, and abortion. Organizers that include the ACLU, Planned Parenthood, and Ohio Physicians for Reproductive Rights have until July 5th to gather 413,446 valid signatures. The Ohio Democratic Party has volunteered to help collect signatures.
To oppose the effort, pro-life leaders in Ohio have formed a 501c4 coalition represented by Ohio Right to Life, as well as Right to Life affiliates in Cincinnati, Dayton, Cleveland, and Toledo, the Center for Christian Virtue, and the Ohio Christian Alliance. Laura Streitman, Executive Director of Cincinnati Right to Life, is joining us this evening to talk about the amendment and why it's so dangerous for Ohio. Welcome, Laura.
Thank you for having me.
Laura, set the stage. So you want to? What? Oh, I'm sorry. I was just going to ask what if you just tell us what the abortion situation is right now in Ohio.
So as of today, March 15th, 2023, abortion through 22 weeks for any reason in Ohio is legal. If you remember, Roe was overturned because of the Dobbs case. Our heartbeat law, which Governor DeWine had signed in 2019 into law, but again was of course objected federally by Planned Parenthood and company. That law was given a stay in 2019. So as soon as Roe was overturned because of the Dobbs decision, our heartbeat law did go into effect because of the action of our Attorney General Davios, filed the necessary paperwork in federal court and got our heartbeat law in place. So the end of June of 2022, September 14th of 2022, our heartbeat law was enacted and there were no abortions when there was a detectable heartbeat. Through court filings, you know, again, Planned Parenthood and company, they were able to get a judge in the county where I live in Ohio, in Hamilton County, a Judge Christian Jenkins, who was a Hamilton County Common Pleas judge, to be able to say that there was a right to abortion in Ohio's constitution, and he put a stay on our heartbeat law. But again, more court action, and it finally was just announced yesterday that our Ohio Supreme Court will be hearing that case. And as of right now, we have a 4-3 conservative majority on Ohio's Supreme Court. So we believe they're probably hearing that case this week, next week, or the following, and they'll be making a decision on whether the stay is removed while the whole court case plays out. So we could have an end to abortion in the next few weeks in Ohio. Abortion when there's a heartbeat, at least. Mm-hmm. Not at fertilization, but at least when there's a heartbeat. So there's a lot going on. There are many balls in the air in regards to our laws right now.
Well, Laura, news outlets are reporting that the amendment will allow abortion until viability, about 23 or 24 weeks. But you say it's much worse than that and will allow abortion up until the moment of birth. Why the discrepancy?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. Well, we know why there's the discrepancy, because, you know, abortionists are liars and deceivers. So they want the person in the middle that might not like abortion, but might not want to take it away for a woman because maybe they're for exceptions or whatever. So they build their language to be crafty and slick and deceptive, as we know. So, you know, one of the pieces of the language for this ballot initiative that, again, you mentioned how many signatures they are going to need by July 5th to get this on the ballot on November 7th. And it says that the state shall not directly or indirectly burden, penalize, prohibit, interfere, or discriminate against either an individual's voluntary exercise of this right or person, you know, and it just goes on and on. And it says how it extends to abortion may be prohibited after fetal viability, but in no case may such an abortion be prohibited if in the professional judgment of the pregnant patient's treating physician, it is necessary to protect the pregnant patient's life or health. So that is red flag language always in these amendments. When they say life or health, well, her life, maybe she had an argument with her husband. You know, maybe somehow they fell upon financial hard times. So she could go to her doctor and say, you know, I've decided I don't really want to have this beautiful baby after all. And they can come up with their excuses. And we know from being in the pro-life movement for so many years, all of us, we know this happens more frequently than people want to admit. So it's a dangerous, horrible amendment for many reasons, that being one of them. It really gives no limits on abortion. And while it's horrible that we have 22 weeks right now in Ohio, and of course, even if we dial it back to heartbeat, you know that we are only satisfied with abortion ending with fertilization. This is extreme to the opposite end of the spectrum.
Mm-hmm. Well, what are some of the other dangers that are lurking in the shadows of this amendment?
40 weeks gestation with this language. Oh, there's so many. You know, one of the main things is the fact that this amendment fits a very disturbing pattern that we've seen in other states. And it was right there with them, where activists divide children from their parents to further their dangerous political agenda and their gender ideology. Right now, Ohio law protects a parent's rights when it comes to their children's personal decisions, including whether to have an abortion or get a sex change operation. This amendment would completely toss out all parental rights as well. And we know that, by the way, that it is written, every individual has the right to make or carry out one's own reproductive decisions. And when you see that kind of language, one's reproductive decisions, that's what they're referring to, this gender ideology. And, you know, we know that, you know, with history of Planned Parenthood, the left and the media will argue the amendment does not eliminate parental consent. But, you know, we know that it does. And the proposed anti-parent amendment says the state shall not burden or interfere with any reproductive decisions. So, you know, a child could go in and the state would be over the parent and the state would have the rule over the child, which, I mean, this is horrible. This is as bad as it gets. This is extreme and radical. And it's not the way that our society in America was founded.
Well, Laura, tell us how the Pro-Life Coalition came together and how you're working to defeat this proposal.
Right. It's really been a beautiful part of this journey. You know, we all began talking in the fall, knowing that these abortionists had come undone with Roe, as we've seen around the country with all the attacks on pregnancy centers and attacks on churches. We knew that they were not going to lay dormant and just see abortion come to an end. So we started our conversation to build a team where we all knew we all had to work together as one. The leaders of all the different pro-life organizations from every corner of the state, we would meet in Columbus and we would pray together and talk about how we would build the strong coalition. We talked to Christian faith leaders around the state, including Archbishop Schnur in Cincinnati. We have six Catholic dioceses in the state of Ohio. And the Archbishop, who is my Archbishop here in Cincinnati, assured us that if we could form a unified team where we were all working towards the common good to protect women in Ohio, and by protecting women, we're protecting their preborn children, that the church would even support us as well. So that those were our first steps, and they just keep going.
Well, that's fantastic. So what can pro-life Ohioans do to help?
We need lots of help. Obviously, we need financial support. We need you, and you can donate to Cincinnati Right to Life or any one of the pro-life organizations that you're used to supporting. The money will be put towards defeating this amendment. We obviously need you to pray. Pray harder, pray and fast. And please do not sign, absolutely do not sign the petition when you are approached by ballot, you know, signature or gatherers. Tell all your friends, tell all your loved ones how radical this is. Do not remain silent. Share on social media. Share at your church. Approach your pastor. Ask him to speak about this from the pulpit. We know that all the bishops in the state are giving directives on communicating to their parishioners how we have to defeat this measure.
Well, Laura, we know you have your work cut out for you, and we'll certainly be praying for your success. And thanks so much for joining us. We hope you'll come back and update us when we get closer to November 7th. Thank you.
Certainly.
Yeah. Thanks for coming on.
So grateful for life. Thank you for helping us communicate our great need right now, and especially for the prayers.
Absolutely. Good night, Laura.
Utah Governor Spence Cox on Wednesday signed legislation that will prevent new abortion businesses from obtaining licenses beginning May 2nd and will transition all abortions to hospitals beginning January 1st, 2024. Abortion remains legal until 18 weeks in Utah, while a challenge to a near-total ban works its way through state courts. A University of Florida student and a union employee were arrested on felony charges last weekend for allegedly assaulting campus police as the student was being arrested for stealing a pro-life sign. The Ohio-based organization Created Equal set up a display of abortion victim images on the campus of the Gainesville University as part of its 2023 Justice Ride. On March 10th, 21-year-old student Ian Dinkla took a sign from the display, put it in his car, and drove away. Created Equal called the police, who later tried to arrest Dinkla when he returned to the exhibit. Dinkla and Bryn Taylor, 26, president of the UF Graduates Assistant United Union, got into a scuffle with police that ended with them both in handcuffs. Created Equal has the whole thing on video.
Yeah, someone is currently stealing my property.
My name is Ian Dinkla. I live in
the... Oh, he's got a weapon. He's got a knife. He's got a knife.
Hey, Ian.
It's legal, it's utility.
No, I don't want to hurt anybody.
Back the f*** up. No, Ian, you can't take
a knife.
Threatening anyone, I'm not trying to hurt anyone. I'm just
I have, this. He just put my property into his vehicle. The guy who stole the sign is here. Back up, back up. Give the police space. Give the police space to work.
Are you kidding?
Whatever y'all want.
These people are allowed to exist here. A student on this campus. It's a peaceful protest. It's a peaceful protest. You're allowed to exist here defending people who come here and harass people. He made it violent. Don't act like this. You insane. Insane. Oh my. What is wrong?
Mark Harrington, president of Created Equal, released the following statement. It is no surprise that those who advocate for the killing of preborn humans resort to violence towards those with whom they disagree. Created Equal condemns abortion-related violence and will continue to promote equality for all humans, both born and preborn. A Texas man is suing three of his ex-wife's friends for $1 million each for helping her to obtain a chemical abortion, which is illegal in the state. The lawsuit contains screenshots of text messages among the women, which show their plan to obtain and deliver the medication to Mark Silva's ex-wife in July 2022, after Roe v. Wade had been overturned and abortion banned in Texas. Silva's wife filed for divorce 2 months before the abortion. This is the first of its kind case that will test a Texas law that allows private citizens to sue anyone who helps a woman have an abortion. Pro-life leaders are joining Republican senators in taking on the Department of Defense over its abortion policy. Last month, Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin announced that the department would provide 3 weeks of paid leave and reimburse travel expenses for military personnel and their dependents who have to go out of state to have an abortion. Austin said the move would protect the, quote, readiness of the force. Alabama Senator Tommy Tuberville is now blocking the confirmations of U.S. military nominees unless the Pentagon rescinds the policy, and his efforts this week were endorsed by 24 pro-life leaders in a letter sent to all 49 Republicans in the United States Senate. The mission of the U.S. military is to provide the military forces needed to deter war and ensure our nation's security, not to pursue an abortion agenda being pushed by the Biden administration and their radical allies on the outside, the letter said. Earlier this month, 12 Republican senators on the Senate Armed Services Committee wrote to Austin, saying the new policy on abortion represented, quote, a purely political action taken without consulting Congress. Iowa Senator Joni Ernst on Wednesday introduced a bill to prevent the Defense Department from following through on its plan to pay for abortion. Ernst, the first female combat veteran elected to the Senate, said the Pentagon should not be mobilized against the unborn. A 21-year-old Pennsylvania woman has been charged with murder in the death of her baby, who was born at 23 weeks. Police said Shamari Truax was at her apartment in Williamsport when she felt sick and ended up delivering her daughter on the bathroom floor. The baby was breathing when she cut the umbilical cord, but the mom waited for an hour before driving to a hospital. The baby went into cardiac arrest in the emergency room and died. Police said Truax had an abortion in November, but learned last month that she was still pregnant. Abortion is legal through the 23rd week in Pennsylvania. And finally, there's Jane Fonda. The 85-year-old actress, known for her activism in liberal causes, was a guest on The View last week when she suggested the best way to deal with laws protecting unborn babies from abortion is to murder pro-lifers. The co-host cackled and the audience applauded, while View regular Joy Behar assured viewers that Fonda was just kidding. Was she? You be the judge.
Besides marching and protesting, what else do you suggest? Well, it doesn't happen murder. Overnight. It's not a miraculous.
What did you say?
Murder.
She's kidding. Wait a second. She's just
now,
kidding.
Don't say that. That's
oh, not... you don't know. They'll pick up on that and
yeah,
just run
that's
with
the
it.
Worst.
She's joking. Just kidding. It's
well, let me talk to you about. Let me ask...
The 2023 Wisconsin Supreme Court election will be held on Tuesday, April 4th, 2023, to elect a justice to the Wisconsin Supreme Court for a 10-year term. Milwaukee County Circuit Judge Janet Protasiewicz and former Wisconsin Supreme Court Justice Daniel Kelly advanced from the February 21st nonpartisan primary, receiving 46% and 24%, respectively. Although Wisconsin Supreme Court justices are officially nonpartisan, Kelly is identified as a conservative and Protasiewicz as a liberal. Incumbent Justice Patience Rogensack is retiring after 20 years on the court. She has identified as a conservative and voted consistently with the conservative 4-3 majority on the court. The race will determine the ideological balance of the court for at least the next 2 years. Wisconsin Democrat Party Chair Ben Wickler called it the most important election nobody's ever heard of. The outcome could determine how the court rules on future cases involving abortion rights, voting rights, and redistricting. Additionally, because the court rejected Donald Trump's false claims of fraud in the 2020 presidential election, the outcome of this race could determine how the court rules if a similar attempt is made to overturn the 2024 election. The election has been described as the most important 2023 U.S. election, and with just over 2 weeks to go until the election, it is already the most expensive judicial race in history. As reported previously on Pro-Life Primetime News, Florida's Republican-led legislature filed bills that would ban abortion after 6 weeks of pregnancy, but offer exceptions for victims of rape and incest if they can provide official proof of the crime. Florida Republican Senator Rick Scott and GOP Governor Ron DeSantis aren't close, and at times the two have thrown shade on each other. Scott, who signed bills that placed new abortion restrictions into place while he was governor, said that he is in favor of keeping the state's current ban on abortion after 15 weeks, with exceptions for rape, incest, and the life of the mother. DeSantis said last week he's willing to sign the newly filed bill that would ban abortion after 6 weeks. First off, that's a tough issue for people, Scott said. I mean, you really have to be really compassionate about what people are going through. I think where most people are is reasonable restrictions. And probably most people are about 15 weeks with all the exceptions. On a side note, for pro-abortion advocates who say that pro-lifers don't support the mother after the baby is born, the bill also provides up to $30 million for the Florida Department of Health to create a statewide parenting support network. The network would beef up state-funded services already offered to pregnant women by expanding resources for those who gave birth within 1 year. The measure also prohibits doctors from using telehealth services to consult with patients about treatment with abortion medications. And that's political news in a nutshell. Infertility labs across the country, stored in liquid nitrogen tanks cooled to nearly 200 degrees below zero, an estimated 1 to 1.5 million frozen human embryos await their fate. Recognized as human beings by many faith groups and nearly all pro-lifers, these embryos can be stored indefinitely for a price, or they can be thawed and destroyed if the couple who created them through in vitro fertilization has completed their family. For pro-lifers, destroying an embryo is the same thing as aborting a baby.
But there is another option, one that recognizes the humanity of these embryos. Couples who no longer plan to use their embryos can donate them to another couple who will adopt them and have them transferred to the prospective mother's womb. If the embryo implants, a normal pregnancy and birth can follow. Frozen embryo adoption has been helping couples fulfill their dreams of becoming parents for more than 25 years. And in the words of the guest you are about to meet, it's a solution to a problem created by medical science.
Kimberly Tyson is the vice president of Snowflakes Embryo Adoption, a division of Program of Nightlight Christian Adoptions. The Snowflakes program began in 1997 and was the first in the world to offer embryo adoption. More than 1,000 children have been born through these high-tech adoptions so far at Nightlight. Kimberly is joining us from Colorado this evening. Welcome, Kimberly.
I am so glad to be here to talk to your audience today.
Well, thank you. Can you explain how embryo adoption works, Kimberly?
Sure. At the Snowflakes program, we're doing two things simultaneously. We are helping families who have embryos remaining from their in vitro fertilization treatment that they do not have a plan to use for their own family building. So they are cryopreserved and they're being stored in freezers around the country until a decision can be made as to what to do with them. And the only life-giving decision is to donate them for reproduction. We believe that we should be using the best practices of adoption in matching these families together. And so as an adoption agency, we started this program back in 1997, primarily to help families who have remaining embryos be empowered to choose the family who would receive their gift of embryos, and then the adopting family will give those embryos an opportunity to be born. And as you said, we've had over 1,000 babies born over that 25-year period, and we're really excited about that.
Well, once a match is made, how do you get the embryos to their new parents?
Well, matching is a process that we do very hands-on. We're not using a computer model to do that. I have people on my staff that are reviewing family profiles and such. And once the embryos are matched between the two families and they've mutually agreed upon the match, they sign contracts that are based in property law. And then we arrange to have the embryos shipped from the clinic where the embryos are being stored today to the clinic where the adopting family will have their frozen embryo transfer.
Wow. Well, the baby is genetically different than the adopting parents, right? But during pregnancy, does any of the adopting mom's DNA get to the baby?
No, there doesn't have to be any matching, DNA matching or things like that, like with hearts or livers or kidneys and things like that. Any woman can carry any embryo, so we don't need to do any of those matching types of pre-matching types of things. And none of her DNA gets transferred into the baby, the baby's DNA. The baby is a completely unique individual.
How does the cost of this type of adoption compare to the more standard type?
Oh, that is a great question. Embryo adoption tends to be one of the lowest forms, cost forms of adoption, especially if you're interested in bringing an infant, adopted infant into your family. Domestic infant adoption in the United States is usually $30,000 to $45,000. Wow. Embryo adoption is $9,000 through the Snowflakes program. You also have to have an adoption home study completed, and you need to pay the medical fees for the frozen embryo transfer. So one round of frozen embryo transfer with your adopted set of embryos is going to be about $16,000, but you can adopt a larger set of embryos, so you don't have to keep coming back through our program to get more embryos. If I adopt a set of six embryos, I could have multiple frozen embryo transfers and have genetic siblings in my own family. So that's how that works.
Interesting.
Very interesting. So are there protections for the embryos in your protocols?
Yes, in our contracts, we have language that is all about protecting the lives of the embryos in their frozen state, of course, and then as they are thawing embryos, we want them to be very thoughtful about how many embryos they're thawing. Usually people only will transfer one to two embryos at a time, and so we don't want them to thaw all six embryos, let's say, at once, because then they're probably going to have to refreeze embryos. And we would want them to refreeze embryos, but that's not really best for the embryo to be refrozen. We've definitely had babies born from embryos that have been frozen, thawed, but that's not the best practice. We also don't allow for what's called in the medical world as selective reduction, and certainly don't allow for babies to be aborted.
Interesting. So do you think there is sufficient public awareness that this pathway to parenthood even exists?
Oh, no. And I've been working in this area for 15 years, working to raise awareness. I think that there's still a lot of work to be done. To me, the work is done when embryo adoption just becomes equal with international adoption, domestic infant adoption, foster care and adoption, when it is just that fourth opportunity and method for bringing a child into your family.
Well, Kimberly, this has been fascinating and we think will be very eye-opening for many of our viewers. If they have questions, where can they go for more information?
Well, the easiest thing to visit is our website, which is very easy to remember. It's snowflakes.org. Our organization is called Snowflakes because just like a snowflake, each embryo is unique, it's frozen, and we believe it's a gift from God. So that's why our program is called Snowflakes.
That's great. Well, thank you so much for joining us tonight. And this has really been very, very interesting.
Yes. Well, I hope if you have any listeners to your program, if they have remaining embryos and they've been struggling with what should they do with them, give them life. And we would love to help you choose the family that would receive your gift of embryos and give them an opportunity to be born.
All right. Great message. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Goodbye.
We understand that many of our viewers are Catholic, so we want to point out that the Church does not sanction embryo adoption. In a 2008 document called Dignitas Personae, the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith called the intention of embryo adoption praiseworthy, but said the procedure involves adoptive parents in an immoral procedure.
Catholic bioethicists and theologians, however, continue to debate the issue. Thank you so much for joining us on Pro-Life Primetime News, produced at Priests for Life headquarters in Titusville, Florida. We hope you will tune in every Friday at 9 p.m. Eastern Time.
Before we close, in honor of St. Patrick's Day, traditionally celebrated by wearing green, we would like to share a little information about St. Patrick and the work he did.
After his ordination as a priest, he was sent to Ireland with a dual mission, to minister to Christians already living in Ireland and to begin to convert the rest of the Irish. Interestingly, this mission contradicts the widely held notion that Patrick introduced Christianity to Ireland.
Patrick brought Catholic teachings, including the sanctity of life, to the Irish. So as we celebrate St. Patrick's Day, perhaps the best way to honor him is for Ireland to go back to the principles their patron saint brought them, protection of the unborn. We hope you will support this show and all of our broadcasts by making a donation to prolifegift.org. These donations help fund all of our work here at Priests for Life, which enables us to continue educating, equipping, and activating the pro-life community to end abortion. I'm Teresa Watson, Executive Manager.
I'm Leslie Palma, Communications Director. Remember, life is the only choice.
This has been the End Abortion Podcast. To learn more, to help end abortion, and to connect with us on social media, visit endabortion.net.